Moncrief on News Talk.
We all know we have a housing crisis, and it's often all too easy to ascribe that to the lack of planning on behalf of our government. But we're far from the only country to have this problem. So are there common factors causing it? Tim White from the London School of Economic Studies, Housing, Cities and Inequality. Good afternoon, Tim.
Good afternoon.
Would it be fair to describe the housing crisis as fairly uniform across Europe?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely variations. There are some European countries and even specific cities that have kind of greater protections for housing and have less kind of speculation in their housing markets. But overall, there is a trend towards a kind of intensifying housing crisis. And I would say it's particularly acute in Ireland.
Yeah. And in political terms, is that having an effect, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it is certainly kind of making people feel a bit despondent and kind of neglected. You know, housing is a human necessity for us all. And when people can't afford secure and affordable homes, then, you know, they kind of lose faith in institutions and in democracy.
Mm-hmm. Now, the would it be fair to say that the roots of where we are now lie in the financial crash, and what changed during and after the financial crash?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think particularly in countries like Ireland, kind of response to the financial crash was kind of liberalisation of financial markets and kind of particularly quantitative easing, which ushered a whole flood of private finance into the housing market. And also after the financial crisis, there was, you know, a lot of kind of assets that were kind of undervalued that could be scooped up by investment funds. And you know, we're really still seeing the consequences of that today.
Mm. Now, and when you say scooping up, I was astounded to read that one outfit in Berlin, Deutsche Wohnen, they bought 60,000 flats from the city for $7,500 per apartment. That was a bit of a bargain.
An absolute bargain, yes. I mean, that was under slightly different circumstances following reunification in Berlin. But still, it's a pattern that we've seen happen in different ways across Europe. Basically, the selling off of public assets, of public housing to the financial sector.
Yeah. And as you say, it's at its most acute in Ireland. In Ireland, about half of the units delivered since 2017 were purchased by investment funds. So we would be the highest in that regard, would we be, across Europe?
I think one of the highest. London is also very high. Paris is too. But I would say it's particularly acute, I think, in Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah. And a narrative that we hear in Ireland, and perhaps is repeated in other countries as well, is that we need institutional investors because that, you know, they will generate the building of more homes, and that's the key to the crisis, is building more homes. From your point of view, is that necessarily the case? Is it maybe a slightly bogus argument?
I think it is. You know, the key thing to remember is, you know, these investors don't buy housing for fun. They buy housing so that they can sell it at a profit. So that it's very speculative, and their entire interest is in acquiring assets, increasing the value, increasing the rents on them, and then selling them, ideally as quickly as possible. So really the kind of logics are pushing up property prices. Not all investors operate in the same way, but all of them want to make money from housing. And when you want to make money from housing, you want to push prices up.
Yeah. So it's in from the point of view of an institutional investor, it's not in their interest to build more housing.
Yes, that's exactly right. They thrive on shortages, you know, and in fact, they are known for kind of drip feeding housing into the market when there is kind of more supply on the market. So they will withhold stock from the market. They will do all they can to keep prices high.
Yeah. Who are these institutional investors? Are there many of them, or are we talking about just a handful of institutions?
There are some particularly big ones. You know, the sort of probably the most villainized one in Europe is Blackstone, which is a kind of vast private equity asset manager. And it, you know, at one point it was, for example, it was Spain's biggest landlord with like 40,000 units that it owned. So there are some particularly big ones, and there is a kind of economies of scale thing here. The really big ones have the massive reserves, are able to leverage huge amounts of debt. So the kind of bigger ones get bigger, and the smaller ones are kind of remain quite small.
Yeah. Now, and they would use, depending, I suppose, on the law in each country, but they would use different strategies for pushing up the rent, or perhaps getting rid of the sitting tenants and then getting new ones in, but under a higher rate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one kind of move particularly associated with Blackstone, the investor that I mentioned a second ago, is something called renoviction, where they basically buy up apartment blocks, they renovate them, and they kind of justify increasing the rents by undertaking certain renovations. And interestingly, increasingly, because of the kind of new wave of sort of sustainability and sustainability specifications, they're often using now kind of green renovations as an excuse to hike rents.
Yeah. And now, and tell us about the Blackstone law, because there have been some attempts to try and mitigate this.
Yeah, exactly. So in Denmark, you know, quite a small country, where Blackstone and a couple of other kind of asset managers had a really big impact on the kind of housing economy, pushing up the rents. What they did was they kind of implemented this law that basically meant you can't resell a unit, you know, a certain number of years after you've purchased it. So what it does is it tries to deter these investment funds from kind of buying housing and then flipping it really soon afterwards. So it sort of tries to dampen the speculation.
Yeah. Did that work?
I believe it has been really successful. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not going to solve the problem entirely, and because there are different forms of speculation, but I think it would go, you know, these things do go a long way.
Yeah. Is there a big picture a solution to this?
I mean, my personal opinion, it's boring, but I don't think there's a way of kind of really getting to the heart of the housing affordability crisis without some kind of major level of state intervention in terms of public housing, public provision of housing. I think also things like strengthening the rights of renters, and also taking measures to deter speculation, you know, basically stopping housing from being a kind of investment product as much as you can.
Yeah. Would tax be a big mechanism in that?
Yeah, tax could be. It's not something that's been done very much, but I, you know, taxing kind of institutional landlords could be a really effective way of doing it, I think.
Yeah. Now, across Europe, is there an ideological objection to doing what you just said? Because many of those countries, if not most of those countries, have in the past built social and affordable housing for people. You know, why don't they do more of that now?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and you know, you say ideological, and that is definitely part of the picture here. You know, there is a kind of across much of Europe, there is this real subscription to I suppose the kind of neoliberal logic that the market will be able to deliver on this good. But it's also, you know, it's also kind of material. Most governments have kind of really gutted their welfare provisions, so they simply haven't kind of don't have the reserves and resources to provide this kind of thing anymore. But obviously that could change. And that is where the kind of question of ideology comes in and the will comes in.
Mm. Do you see perhaps a tipping point at such stage? Because it's for governments in sooner or later, you know, this will come home to roost on them and they might be out of power.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this might, you know, this is going to be a major kind of political issue over the next 10 years. It already is, of course. You see kind of in voting patterns, housing is really at the top of the list. So I think, you know, over the next decade, it's very likely that we'll see much more profound changes, you know, just because governments will need to respond to this. A tricky thing is it's quite difficult to do it within conventional political cycles. You know, it takes a long-term mm-hmm. view. And, you know, when you don't get gratification within the remit of a political cycle, then you don't really bother as a politician.
Tim, thanks very much for speaking with us today. Tim White is a research fellow at Queen Mary University of London and the London School of Economics, studying housing, cities and inequality. A few comments on what we were just talking about. What about the state actually building houses? We did it decades ago, but now we farm it out to developers. Will you? You heard Tim's answer on that. Institutional funds and mega landlord developers are now being prioritised as a sector. I have seen so many build-to-rent apartments go up in areas where people would love to be able to buy these homes rather than somebody spending $3,000 a month to rent them. It is infuriating, but this situation is of our own doing. Someone else says, I think the problem with housing is that the people making the decisions are all above a certain age and often from generational wealth. If you are a renter with no family support working at a job that pays the average wage, you simply have no chance of owning your own home. Just look at the number of landlords in the Dáil. And somebody else says, I am a renter. I would love to live in a nicer, newer place. But the price of these apartments that are owned by REITs is astronomical. It is simply not feasible for one person to afford to rent one. We have a system built on profit, which ignores people who do not work in the tech bubble and have six-figure incomes.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.